From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, the ghost in the coal cellar. I kid you not. By the way, get up to the coasttocoastam.com website. Take a look at the picture, the video from China. A soul leaving a body. I don't know if that's been doctored or not, but it is absolutely amazing. Take a look at it. Tell me what you think. Happy 80th birthday to Pepe from your daughter, Lisa. There you go. Happy birthday, Pepe. Here's what's happening. What a bizarre story out of Morocco. A 7-year-old Moroccan girl has died after a zoo elephant threw a rock at her. Managers at the zoo in the Moroccan capital of Rabat confirmed the tragic details. The girl died a few hours after being transferred to the hospital. Video shot by a zoo visitor shows a number of people huddled around the girl and holding her head, which was flowing with blood, while waiting for an ambulance to arrive. The park management said the girl had been hit after a female elephant threw the rock out of its enclosure. It went flying and hit the girl, who had been in the visitor's area with her family, looking at the elephant and trying to take a picture. God, what a freak accident. Well, the presidential game is underway. Hillary Clinton now has accepted the Democratic Party's nomination for president. Joe Gomez, of course, our correspondent, who was at the Republican National Convention and has been spending equal time with the Democrats. Joe, give us a rundown on today.
Well, George, tonight capped off the four-day-long festivities here in Philadelphia for the Democratic National Convention. And what a blowout they had. Hillary Clinton broke the glass ceiling, becoming the first woman to become a party's nominee for president. And she came out on stage wearing a white pantsuit, the color of women's suffragettes. And she also laid into Donald Trump, but not before she reached out to Bernie Sanders supporters, saying that your cause is our cause. Incidentally, as that was happening, George, a massive protest occurred outside. Police had to line up outside an already extended perimeter fence as Sanders supporters chanted, "Hell no, DNC, we won't vote for Hillary."
Joe, now the campaign is underfoot. I thought Hillary, not being partisan here by any means, did great with her speech. What was the feeling inside the convention hall?
Well, it was electric. I mean, I think that there was a lot of anticipation for this speech. Hillary Clinton had a very tall order to, I think, not be outshined by President Obama, Vice President Joe Biden, or Michelle Obama. So this, coming into this, I think there was a lot of excitement, and I felt that she delivered as well. I spoke to a lot of folks about this was probably the best speech that she's given yet. She painted herself as the sensible candidate, the candidate of reason, somebody who you can trust with the nuclear codes. She tried to paint Donald Trump as the opposite. She questioned his temperament. She said that he would turn morning in America to midnight in America. And then she painted a very frightening picture of him with the nuclear codes, arguing that a man you can bait with a tweet is not a man you can trust with nuclear weapons.
Joe, thank you for your coverage over the past couple of weeks. We really appreciate it here.
Oh, thank you, George.
Joe Gomez, our national correspondent for Coast to Coast AM. By the way, we have an Instapoll going just like we did when Donald Trump had his acceptance speech, an Instapoll for Hillary. It's at coasttocoastam.com. At the top there, at the bar, the navigation bar, click poll, and it'll take you right in there. Frankly, I'm surprised by some of the results on that poll. Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. Well, John, I can't wait to get your reaction to her speech and acceptance.
Well, I mean, I totally agree with you, George. I think that, you know, for Hillary, it was a masterful speech. It's pure Clintonian propaganda at its finest, the best smoke blowing and spin that money can buy. You know, it's in the context, it's really interesting what Joe said about, you know, she's concerned about Trump with the nuclear codes. Well, how about the fact that she has turned Vladimir Putin into an enemy of the United States? She keeps beating the Cold War drums, and as president, would virtually take the U.S. to the closest confrontation, as Obama has, to with Russia since the Cuban Missile Crisis. So it makes me wonder who's really the safer of the two. Now, the interesting thing about the speech, if you really get down to the heart of it, what Hillary Clinton did in this speech is to completely blueprint what O.J. Simpson's trial attorney, Johnny Cochran, did in the Cochran trial. And that is, she prosecuted the case against Donald Trump as a racist, a grand wizard of the KKK, the last Mohicans of the, you know, kind of failed white society that wants to maintain control. And I think you can see the fervor in the audience, which, you know, America was watching the audience, and you saw the demographics in the audience. But what I think really comes out with this is that Hillary is got no solutions for anything. When she was asked what she would do when she's presenting her itemized list of how she's going to work with the economy, there was nothing that was done any different. In fact, preempted and co-opted what Trump said in his speech. You talk about plagiarism, talking about ending bad trade deals and dealing with China, you know, all of the things that Trump was talking about. So in this speech, she tried to really have a little bit of something for everybody, including the independent vote. Obviously, the minority vote is, you know, buying what she's saying, lock, stock, and barrel. But if this wasn't pulling from the bottom of the race card deck, I don't know what is.
Dr. John Curtis, onlinecolumnist.com. And John, thank you for what you've done for us over the past couple weeks as well. Now, Howard Bloom with us. Howard, we got to get your take on this as we wrap up this week.
You know that John and I see things from opposite planets.
Oh, you're looking with different prisms, that's
right,
for sure.
Each party has its own fantasy world, and we stick to it, and the real question is which one is closer to reality. So here's my report on the night. The star factor. Carole King, Ted Danson, Mary Steenburgen, and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Sheila E., Kate Perry, Nancy Pelosi, Barbara Boxer, and tons more. Elizabeth Warren, Jennifer Granholm, the governor of Michigan. They all went on stage, and some of them were surprisingly powerful. Then there were the real people, General John Allen, who we'll get to in a minute, who was the commander in Afghanistan, along with 30 other admirals and generals. The Dallas County Sheriff, we just had 5 policemen murdered in Dallas. This is a person who's right on the front lines. She was up there endorsing Hillary Clinton. The family members of 3 fallen police officers endorsing Hillary Clinton, giving talks about why they believe in her. Tammy Duckworth, one of the best-known veterans who lost limbs in Afghanistan, an undocumented immigrant who lost a leg in a car accident or two, but still stood up for other undocumented immigrants in his finished college, a minimum wage worker who met Hillary, believes in Hillary, who can't make ends meet, but believes someday she will be able to. 2 lifelong Republicans who worked tirelessly for Republican political campaigns and who switched to Hillary because they believe that the Republican Party has abandoned the values that they worked for, the value of making it possible for everybody who works hard to rise. And then, most important, here's what General John Allen, the commander in Afghanistan, with those 30 other fellow generals and admirals behind him, said. He said, "We trust in Hillary's judgment. We believe in her vision for uniting America against the forces of hatred, chaos, and darkness. We know that she, as no one else, knows how to use all the instruments of power, not just the military. I promise you," said General Allen, "that Hillary Clinton will be exactly the commander-in-chief we need. I served with her. With her, America will continue to lead, and we will defeat evil. We will defeat ISIS. We will lead and strengthen NATO. We will stop the spread of nuclear weapons. Our military will be stronger than ever. They will have the greatest equipment you've ever seen. Our veterans will get the care they deserve. Our international relations will not be reduced to a business transaction. Our armed forces will not become an instrument of torture, and they will not be ordered to engage in murder or carry out other illegal activities. With Hillary, we will continue to be the transformative nation. To our allies, we are with you. To those acting against civilization, we will oppose you. To our enemies, we will pursue you. You will fear us. And to ISIS and the terrorists, we will defeat you." That is the general who led us in Afghanistan.
Howard, bottom line, she's going to get a bump from today?
The bottom line is that she is up against the toughest opponent of her life, Donald Trump is able to tap into the American discontent in ways I've never seen in my lifetime. He is a true demagogue, and demagogues have a power to reach right down to the nerves and bring them up to the surface, and he has that power. And Hillary is not a powerful speaker on stage, even though tonight, as both John and Joe said, she pulled off the toughest speech of her life.
She did.
She came out flying. So we will have to see. This is going to be, well, as Cuomo said, this is an epic battle for the soul of America, and we will see who comes out on top.
Howard, thanks for your participation, and I'm sure we'll be talking to you in the future. Well, sleep. A study of more than 1,000 adults showed that 25% of those who spend less than 5 hours sleeping every night suffer from memory malfunction, which affects their quality of life. Poor sleep was classed as under 5 hours a night, and the results found that all aspects of memory are affected by low levels of sleep. So try to get some, huh? Clark County coroner in Las Vegas, John Fudenberg, said that an autopsy has been scheduled on Jerry Doyle, who has died in Las Vegas at the age of 60. He was an actor and syndicated radio host. It'll take several weeks, they say, before the toxicology tests determine a cause of death. Apollo astronauts who ventured to the moon are at 5 times greater risk of dying from heart disease than shuttle astronauts, according to U.S. researchers, citing the dangers of cosmic radiation beyond the Earth's magnetic field. A streak of light seen bursting through the night sky late Wednesday apparently was a Chinese rocket that re-entered the atmosphere near California. What else have people been seeing? Let's check in with Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Go ahead, Peter.
Yeah, that last report leads very nicely into my report tonight, George. Boy, it was a dramatic night last night. I don't know if you or any of your staff saw that object passing over California, but my phone, the hotline, lit up like a Christmas tree about 9:38 p.m., and it's still ringing. But it was pretty dramatic. After about five or half a dozen calls, I started putting pieces together and realized it was probably re-entering space debris, and that's been confirmed by the newspapers and also by some friends of mine who track satellites. But it was pretty dramatic, and it's yet another lesson in the fact that people can look at something and report it quite accurately, as they did last night, and I compliment the Coast listeners for the great job they did last night. This is another week, George, where I had to discipline myself. I cut down 3 dozen reports to a dozen, and dozen cut in half, so I've got about 6 or 7 reports that I'd like to present in rapid sequence. First one comes from last Sunday, the 24th of July, about 45 minutes past midnight in Hamilton, Ontario. Young woman was sitting on a couch in her apartment with her mother, and they heard a faint whirring outside her, and immediate reaction was that it was somebody flying a quadcopter. Looked through the screen door, and she saw a green light, which she thought confirmed her suspicion. After about 5 seconds, she went to the screen door, opened it. Then she realized that the green light was on top of a gray disc-shaped saucer that was hovering next to another apartment building. The saucer did an abrupt 180-degree turn and rose very quickly, almost vertically, going over her apartment building, a very dramatic sighting. And she says the only time she heard the whirring was when the object was moving. When it was stationary, it was totally silent. Very interesting report. About 12 hours later, Quincy, Massachusetts, gentleman ran his car into one of, I think, an automated car wash. He was standing at the other end, I presume waiting to see how much paint was left on it and whether it still had mirrors or not. And he just idly looked up above him, saw a couple of what he describes as seagull-type birds. I don't know why he couldn't identify them. I allow for the possibility they may have been buzzards waiting to see what was left of his car, but then his attention was drawn up much higher than the birds circling above him, and he saw 2 slender, black, triangular objects. He looked at them with his camera. Apparently it has some kind of magnification. He could see striations on the side of these or the sides of these triangles that were moving very rapidly, very abruptly, moving in a circle much faster than the birds above his head. A very interesting report. 2 hours later, a report from Thornton, Colorado, gentleman saw a very slender, black, triangular craft just glide over his neighborhood, over his neighbor's house. Very interesting report, although the gentleman who submitted it elects to remain totally anonymous, unfortunately. A few hours after that sighting in Thornton, a gentleman in New Braunfels, Texas, was standing, I believe he was standing outside. Suddenly his property was just illuminated by a brilliantly bright red light that seemed to come from above, although he couldn't see the source of it, mysteriously. It took about 2 seconds, he estimates, for the light to reach its maximum intensity. It stayed there for about a second and then just went out. He said the light was so bright it illuminated the interior of his house. Last two reports, last Sunday night, two adult males were driving on Interstate 90 near Snoqualmie Pass. There was a big traffic jam, they report. Long story short, they think they were abducted.
Wow.
That was reinforced by the fact that the next morning they woke up, both of them had bloody pillows from apparent nosebleeds, which neither of them had ever had before. And finally, last report, I wouldn't have included this past report in my report on Coast to Coast just because it hinges on eyewitness hearsay evidence, but something very similar happened just two nights ago, Tuesday, the 26th of July, near Heber, Utah. Traffic stopped on the highway, people outside their cars looking at a dozen golden lights. If anybody was there two nights ago in Heber looking at those lights and watching the events that took place, we'd love to hear what they have to say about it. Anyway, lots going on, and
sure is.
Thanks very much, George.
Thanks, Peter. We'll talk to you next week as well. Up next, GMO labeling bill is causing some mixed reactions. We'll talk with Jeffrey Smith about that next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast with our special guest, Jeffrey Smith. There are more than 1,100 food and agriculture organizations that support a bill that would require companies to label products that contain genetically modified organisms, also known as GMOs. Some say it won't work, though, because it'll be up to the companies to show how they want to display the label on the package. And a petition is circulating now asking the president to veto the bill. Jeffrey Smith, international best-selling author, filmmaker, executive director of the Institute of Responsible Technology. What say you about this bill, Jeffrey?
Well, it's a sham, George, and I'm sorry to say that people have been confused about it. It's a George Orwellian type of thing, claiming that it's going to provide mandatory labeling, but it's absolutely a disaster. Let me explain the background.
Sure thing.
On July 1st, the bill from Vermont went into effect requiring labeling of genetically engineered foods, and that was a good bill. That had been 5 years in the making. In fact, I started working with the people in Vermont in 2003 when they passed a seed labeling bill, and they came up with a good bill that requires foods to be labeled, and because some of these major companies didn't want to violate the law in Vermont, they were forced to label their products as containing genetically modified food all over the country. So if you go to the store and you look carefully at a bunch of products, even sodas, you'll find it says made with genetic engineering or made partially with genetic engineering. Now, there was a lot of lobbyists, millions of dollars spent to try and stop this labeling bill because it would have basically created labeling nationwide, even though it was only one small state.
Mm-hmm.
And so they created a furor, and they had already passed what we call the DARK Act in the House a year ago, which we call it DARK because it's denying Americans the right to know, which would have eliminated the state's abilities to pass any labeling bill.
But Jeffrey, isn't a sham bill better than no bill?
Well, this is what it does. It excludes most processed foods from requiring a label at all. So if it's a processed food that contains GMOs, it's not going to be labeled.
Okay.
It defines genetic engineering so most GMOs in the market wouldn't qualify. And then it gives the USDA 2 years to criteria for labeling, likely contain even more loopholes. On top of that, if a company is using GMOs and meets the criteria, they can label their, quote, label their product with an 800 number or a QR code that forces the consumer to go on a wild goose chase to call the number or scan the phone, scan using their smartphone to go on a website, to navigate the website to find out the answer.
All right, hold on, Jeffrey. We'll be back with more. Jeffrey's with us for 2 hours, and we will take your calls next hour. Well, we've got a month to go now with our Living It Up in Asheville live event, Asheville, North Carolina. Really looking forward to it. Some great guests there, ufologist Micah Hanks, William Forstgen talking about EMPs and solar flares, and paranormal investigator Joshua P. Warren will be there, and he's got some tricks up his sleeve, don't you, Josh?
Yes, I do. And, you know, George, people email me and they say, are you being serious? Is this truly a once-in-a-lifetime experience? And I say, yes, this is a once-in-a-lifetime experience. You, me, Bill Forstgen, Micah Hanks, people who show up are going to be able to actually touch some debris collected near the Roswell site. Asheville is absolutely beautiful this time of year, so if you're ever going to do this, now is the time.
I'm looking forward to that, and I also hear rumors about some kind of haunted doll that you might bring. I know you're not going to confirm it, but keep it away from me.
You're going to scare everybody away now, George.
Nah, even more people will come to see it. Hey, Josh, I look forward to seeing you then.
It's going to come here before you know it.
It's going to be here in weeks, August 27th. So here is how you can go. And by the way, we're going to do a meet and greet right after the event. You can call this number during business hours, 828-257-4530. That's 828-257-4530. Or simply go to our website, coasttocoastam.com, and click the picture of Asheville, North Carolina, and look for the tickets, but make sure you look for the date, August 27th. Back with Jeffrey Smith as we talk about GMOs. And Jeffrey, I assume you would prefer if the president vetoed this bill.
Absolutely. In fact, I'd like to encourage people to call the White House tomorrow. Because if he doesn't veto the bill by the end of the day tomorrow, it will go into law because he gets 10 days. And if the Senate is still in session, which it's set up to be, then it goes into effect. So call the White House, 202-456-1111. That's 202-456-1111. Put it in your speed dial and tell Obama to veto S-764. And that's the only way that it won't go into law is if he stops it. Now, he said in his campaigning in 2000, before his first term, that he was in favor of labeling, and he hasn't done a thing about it. In fact, the Obama administration has been worse than the Bush administration in their position on GMOs and their instructions of the USDA and telling them what not to regulate, etc. It's been a disaster. So there's now opened the gates for thousands of products to be entered into the market with no regulation, and now this bill is basically a sham bill, which if a company doesn't even want to participate, they don't have to because there's absolutely no enforcement. There's nothing that can happen to the company except they get listed by the USDA as not participating. So it's kind of like a sham bill that gives people the impression that things are labeled even though they're not.
Now, what's the current state of GMOs in the country right now, Jeffrey?
Well, you know, a lot of people look at this particular bill and think we're losing, but actually the opposite is the case. In May, I declared to our subscribers at responsibletechnology.org that the tipping point in the United States is underway. And I'll explain why I say that. The tipping point is the moment when the food companies realize that using GMOs is costing them money and they want to start replacing with non-GMO ingredients in order to brag and boast so they don't lose money to their competitor who's already bragging and boasting. Now, that's how GMOs were kicked out of Europe. That's how bovine growth hormone was kicked out of most dairies in the United States. The natural products industry hit their tipping point against GMOs in 2013, and the tipping point is underway in the conventional food industry. For example, we have Del Monte, Campbell's, Hershey's, Post, General Mills, Red Gold, Applegate, Dannon, and others bragging about certain products either already non-GMO or going to be. In fact, Nestle's is dedicating expensive TV commercial time to brag that their coffee creamer is non-GMO. And we've heard from insiders that many major companies are quietly removing all GMOs from their entire product line, but they're not yet announcing it because they don't want to admit that they're using it until it's gone. So their opposition to the mandatory labeling was in part a way to delay the spotlight on their products until they've had a chance to remove it. So that's the good news. Now, what's not happening so much is removal of GMO animal feed. It's happening with Applegate, it's happening with Dannon, but it's not happening with most, and we want to have a program to push that along. Also, it's not, this whole tipping point is not being replicated in many countries, and so we want to replicate that as well. So we're raising money at responsibletechnology.org to open offices in other countries to take the same model and same assets that we used here, like the film Genetic Roulette, The Gamble of Our Lives, which was so successful, and translate it and implement it around the world.
Jeffrey, do we have any data? Do we have any surveys? Do we have any results that shows that long-term eating of GMO processed foods or any kind of foods is damaging to us?
It's interesting you should say surveys, because we actually conducted a survey at the Institute for Responsible Technology with 3,611 people, asking them what they got better from, what symptoms they improved from when they switched to a non-GMO diet. And their answers in the survey were consistent with the informal surveys I did from the podium at over 125 lectures, asking tens of thousands of people by show of hands and by mentioning which symptoms got better, what they got better from. It also matches what the...
Oh, we lose you, Jeffrey? Let me see if we found him here. Jeff?
3,600 people, and also in every lecture that I've given, and asked the question, is digestive disorders. And over 80% of the people that showed improvement in anything showed it in digestion. The next was increased energy, then weight loss, then reduced brain fog. Then we have things like asthma, allergies, anxiety, depression, skin, a whole host of things. And we have incredible stories of kids getting better from a variety of things, including autism. In fact, I'm doing a film right now called Secret Ingredients, and you can see the trailer at secretingredientsmovie.com. And we're in the final stages of putting that together and setting up the animation. In fact, we're also raising money for that. We interview families with three different families that had autistic sons, and they switched to an organic diet. Two of the sons are no longer autistic. They switched to a mainstream classroom. We went to a clinic where they switched everyone to organic. It's a chiropractic clinic, and they specialize in infertility. And 100% of their infertile couples, all 77, got pregnant and had kids because of this treatment program, which included switching to organic. Now, what I've described to you, George, is real-life evidence we hear over and over again in thousands of people. And the doctors are saying, that's good enough. We don't need to see peer-reviewed, published clinical trials like they do with drugs, because they're simply not being done. But if you look at this, the studies that have been done on animals, you see that the animals that are eating GMOs are being afflicted with the same problems that the humans are getting better from. And when farmers and veterinarians take the livestock off of GMOs and put them on non-GMOs, the animals get better from the same products, the same problems. And then if you look at the specific nature of GMOs, that the massive collateral damage that occurs as a result of creating the GMO, the BT toxin, the insecticide that's produced in corn and cotton, or the Roundup that's sprayed on 80% or more of GMOs as they're Roundup-ready crops, engineered not to die when sprayed with Roundup. If you look at the qualities and the characteristics of these aspects of GMOs, you would even be able to predict these specific disorders and diseases. In fact, I asked one of the top GMO researcher, who also researches Roundup, Dr. Seralini, if you look just at the laboratory results on GMOs and Roundup, what would you predict would happen to humans when they eat this stuff? And he said, first you'd have the digestive problems, then the hormonal imbalance that leads to organ damage and the problems with the heart. And that's the kind of thing we're seeing in people.
That's frightening. Frightening indeed. Any European countries banning the total use of GMO foods?
No one is banning the consumption of GM foods, but they're banning two things. They're banning the in 19 out of the 27 or so countries in the EU, and many of them are lobbying to try and ban Roundup. Roundup was declared as active ingredient glyphosate, which is sprayed again on most GMOs, as well as some non-GMOs, which we can talk about, because people want to know how to avoid it once they realize how bad it is. The World Health Organization declared glyphosate, the active ingredient in Roundup, as a class 2A carcinogen, which means it's probably causing cancer in humans. They concluded it definitely causes cancer, it definitely causes mutations in human DNA, which can lead to cancer, and where it's sprayed a lot, the cancer rates spike. But they didn't have enough evidence to show that it definitely causes cancer, but it's enough for California's Prop 65 to require it to be called carcinogenic soon as part of labels. So there's a lot of countries in Europe that are trying to get the registration blocked, the re-registration, but the European Commission ignored these countries and re-registered glyphosate for plan to do it for 15 years, but they're doing it for 18 months so that they allow yet another agency to try and confirm the carcinogenicity that the World Health Organization had already declared.
Jeffrey, what was it that got you involved in fighting GMOs? Something happened. You saw something years ago. What was it?
Well, 20 years ago, I went to a lecture by a genetic engineer, and he was blowing the whistle on the technology. And he was explaining that the technology, by its very nature, was unpredictable, and that it could create side effects that could affect the entire population, and no one would even know if they're getting sick from it because there's no labeling and no monitoring. Over, he said, once they're planted outside, they will cross-pollinate, and they will pollute the gene pool. The gene pool self-propagates, and so it would last essentially for as long as those species on Earth last. The only thing that lasts longer than the self-propagating pollution of the gene pool is extinction. And yet, this was in 1996 in Iowa, where I lived at the time, and where they're about to be planting all these GMOs, and hardly anyone in America knew about it. Now, my background is in strategy and communications, education, marketing, and I was aware that this information was potent and powerful, and yet it was being presented in a scientific way that couldn't really resonate with a lot of people, and it was just one small room. So I decided to help out and interview the scientists to translate the science into English, and I've been doing that for the last 20 years. I wrote the first compilation of the health dangers of GMOs called Genetic Roulette. Before that, I wrote Seeds of Deception. I've been spinning around the globe to 42 countries, testifying in different governments, and now I'm actually...
I think we lost you, Jeffrey. Tommy, get him back. We'll try to get him back on. He is gone. Jeffrey Smith, our special guest, talking about GMOs. I sometimes wonder, every time we get involved in something controversial, something bizarre happens to the guest. I don't know why it happens. I don't know how it happens. And I don't want to dabble in conspiracies, but something weird always happens. I mean, you probably heard his phone fluttering for a little bit, and then he's gone. Simple as that. Well, we will do our best to get him back. If not, we'll do some open lines. And then, of course, later on the program, we've got a very special guest. Andrea Message joins us as she's going to be talking about her true cases as a lone investigator into demonology. She is one of a kind. And do you have him back yet, Tom? Nope, he's not there. He's nowhere to be found. And that may be it. Anyway, while we continue to see where Mr. Smith is going to be, I'm going to talk with you about something. Well, we've got a call west of the Rockies. Welcome to the program. Who is this? Michelle, what are you calling for?
When I started listening to you talking about GMOs, yeah. I was having some abdominal problems. I had my water tested. We didn't know what was going on. Doctor tested me for Giardia. Wasn't that. got online, there were all these people with the same complaints and being told the same thing, that it wasn't Giardia. And so having heard you guys talk about the GMOs, I thought, well, okay, living with my daughter, they eat a lot of corn. So I quit eating the corn, and the symptoms went away.
See?
So I
it
really
happens.
Yeah, because it just tore my gut up. It was horrible. I would have to call her and tell her, you have to come home from work. I can't watch the kids.
And now you feel 100% better?
Oh, yeah. It's just incredible, but nobody wants to believe me. They think I'm just the whack job.
No, you're far from that, Michelle.
And it's, you know, incredible. I watched that I don't eat GMOs, and I don't have this problem.
Okay, and I think we've got Jeffrey back for just a little bit, Jeff, and we'll try to fix the line at the top of the hour. But
I'm back.
They're out to get you, aren't they?
Well, you know, they actually have paid scientists and PR people who troll and look for ways to discredit me and others. The New York Times revealed recently that a bunch of scientists who claimed that they were independent, who attacked me and others, turns out, based on Freedom of Information requests, are getting paid by Monsanto quietly and often getting told by Monsanto what to say and how. And they also were able to influence, journals that published stuff and then retracted. They were able to influence media, and we're tracking them and we're exposing them. And we get that information out at the Institute for Responsible Technology.
Jeffrey, this is just a question for you to guess at, and that is, do you think that when people hear you're going to be on the program, somebody does something like to your phone line? Is that possible?
It's possible. And for years, I had these clicks in my phone line, and I was sure that it was someone listening in or something. But you know, now we know that everyone listens. You know, everything is recorded, but I have a feeling that I'm probably not just treated like anybody. I know that they know about me at the State Department, they know about me at the USDA, they know about me at the FDA, as well as the EPA. I testified at these places. Some people in those agencies are happy about what we're doing, but their public face is a frown.
Are there any scientists that are in favor of GMOs, in your opinion, who are not being paid by companies and corporations?
Absolutely. You see, there's the liars and there's the lied to. And it's a very important distinction. We can't believe that everyone who's in favor of GMOs is aware that they're actually a problem and distorting the evidence, or, you know, being paid to distort the evidence. I am aware of the type of, quote, scientific arguments that are made by the biotech industry and how loud and at such velocity they circulate these things through echo chambers of their paid supporters. And they make arguments that sound good on the surface. But what I've been doing for more than a decade is drilling down to the details, to the numbers. And it's interesting, if you look at just Monsanto's own research, they'll claim in the title and the abstract and the conclusion that there was no problem, that the rats that were fed their GM corn passed with flying colors. However, I talked to a former Monsanto scientist, and he said that actually, when he was aware working at the company, the rats got damaged by the corn, and so they rewrote the study to hide the effect. But I wasn't surprised by that, because I knew that through lawsuits and through leaks, the raw data was actually obtained by independent scientists who reanalyzed it with proper statistics and showed that there was, in fact, a problem. And when they ran the same study and extended a 90-day study to 2 years, the rats actually suffered from multiple massive tumors, early death, and organ damage. And yet, when that came out, Monsanto and their PR firm just attacked the scientists ruthlessly, attacked the study with unscientific statements, and suppressed the research and impact of that study, as well as other studies.
Do you think... go ahead, Jeffrey. Finish up.
Well, now, follow-up studies where they look at the actual molecular changes in those tissues preserved from those rats confirm without a doubt that the Roundup herbicide and that the GMO corn are in fact causing the organ damage that was indicated in this long-term study by Cerulini in France.
All right, we're going to come back in a moment and take phone calls with Jeffrey Smith about GMOs, and also we're going to try something tonight. Twitter. those of you who tweet, send us a question for Jeffrey, and we'll try to get that on, okay? You can also use the hashtag GMO Dangers when you send your tweet.